John the Baptist and I had an odd relationship in primary school. Because of my failure to grasp the purpose of the Father, the little sign that tells you to lengthen a vowel in Irish, I found it hard to distinguish between words such as boshtuch, rain, and bashtia, baptism. Most 10-year-olds growing up in Dublin would take this phonological confusion in their stride, but my circumstances were different. My old primary school, Belgrove National School, was known in Irish as Scoil Ón Baistea, the school of John the Baptist, for the very good reason that it's located in the parish of St. John the Baptist. For me, the closeness of the two words Baistea and Baistea meant my child's imagination conjured up a version of John, who, despite spending much of his time in the desert, was somehow a permanently rain-sodden, bedraggled figure. I imagined him alone, crying in the wilderness, glumly preparing a meal of locusts and honey, while his own personal rain-laden cloud hovered close overhead in an otherwise blue sky. Other details of his story also caught my imagination. I felt for his aging parents, who'd given up hope of ever having a child. I was intrigued by how the babe leapt in Elizabeth's womb when Mary came to visit. I was puzzled by his relationship with his distant cousin Jesus and his self-effacing announcement that he wasn't worthy to untie Jesus' sandals. I certainly didn't feel like that about any of my cousins. My heart went out to him. There, I felt, was a man who hadn't had a fair crack at the whip. There was a man who, if he were alive now, would benefit from an assertiveness course. Years ago, when I started spending time in the west of Ireland, I realised that perhaps I wasn't alone in feeling he had been undervalued. I discovered that St. John's Eve, the 23rd of June, was a special date in the Connemara calendar. It was the custom, I was told, in parts of Connemara and elsewhere, to light bonfires on hilltops and headlands. While I suspected that this practice was more likely to be related to pagan celebrations of the summer solstice, I had enough affection for the old faith to want to persuade myself that these bonfires were part of a nationwide programme to grant a saintly man a little bit of the recognition he had shunned during his life. One summer, more than 30 years ago, my neighbour near Roundstone told me that he'd been assembling materials for a bonfire at Crucón an Túirin. It was years since he had lit a bonfire. It was going to be a big bonfire, he said with pride, and I should come along. Even though I knew well that Sean's first language was Irish, I did the unforgivable and took the opportunity to correct his pronunciation. Do you mean bonfire, Sean? He didn't bat an eyelid. Well, it's tin a crov in Irish, so there must be a bone in there somewhere. Unlike my manners, his etymology was beyond reproach. I learned later that bones were indeed frequently placed in bonfires, St. John's Eve bonfires and others, hence the term. When I joined him at his bonfire on Crucón an Túirin, he was alone, drinking from a can of beer. He reminisced about how in the old days people would say prayers around the fire. There would be music and singing. The young men would vie with one another to jump back and forth through the flames. Cattle would be driven through the dying embers to ward off disease, and the embers would then be placed in a corner of a field to help the crops. He wasn't sure if he believed in any of that now. He was just doing it for old time's sake. Nobody else was bothered. Sure, this might be my last. It was his last. He died a few years later without ever setting another bonfire. St. John's Eve belonged to the old times like so much else in his life. His strength as a curragh rower counted for nothing now that everyone had an outboard motor. His skill as a set dancer, of no value now that everyone preferred television. This day last year, St. John's Eve, around 7 in the evening, I stood near the southern tip of Inishni and checked the coastline from Glinsk to Letterard with binoculars for signs of a bonfire. I could see nothing. I walked up the hill at Kinraver to get a better look. I thought I could see a plume of smoke a few miles to the south near Half Mace, but that was all. A poor showing. Sean was right. Nobody was bothered. A few hours later, I decided to head out again and climbed another hill that affords an almost uninterrupted view of Roundstone, Errisbeg and Bertreboy Bay. Although it was nearly 11 o'clock at night, it was still essentially daylight, bright enough for me to make out the colours of the fields in Letterard across the bay. As I reached the crest of the hill, I felt my heart lift as I counted four bonfires on Errisbeg, a gentle north wind blowing smoke out towards the sea. There was one over at Cashel, and a further five along the stretch from Glinsk to Carna. A particularly bright fire was burning furiously down near the shore, more than 2 miles away at Collamore. If Sean had been alive, he would have been able to see it easily from his favourite vantage point, just leaning in the doorway of his house in Kinraver. It was a beautiful sight, and it would have lifted his heart too. I thought to myself, fair play to John the Baptist.